Welcome to EnviroPod, a chance to catch up with all the good things your Department of Public Works and Environmental Services does to maintain and improve the environment in Fairfax County. I'm your host, Bob DeMarco, and on this edition of the podcast, I'm speaking with Stella Cook, former chair and 30-year member of the Fairfax County Environmental Quality Advisory Council, or EQAC, and George Lamb, former vice chair and 23-year member of EQAC. Stella, George, welcome to EnviroPod.
Thanks,
Bob. Well, it's good to have you here. I've been working at the county for 15 years, and I've heard EQAC a lot in the Board of Supervisors meetings and such, but I'm still a little nebulous on what EQAC is. Can you tell me what the Environmental Quality Advisory Council is and what it does?
It is an appointed council that has a member from each district and four at-large members and a student member. And it's tasked with advising the Board of Supervisors on environmental issues. And that's pretty much it, straightforward. The council functions by having almost every person on the council write a chapter on something they choose as they what they follow. I used to write the water quality chapter. George used to write the land use chapter.
You said a number of members and a student member. How are the members chosen?
The board appoints the members.
Okay. Yep. I was appointed by Supervisor Conley and Chairman Conley and Supervisor Gross and Chairman Bulova.
And I was appointed by Chairman Hanley the first time, and then I sort of got handed down to subsequent chairmen over the years, and it ended up with Jeff.
Jeff appointed both of us last time.
Yeah, the last time.
So did you have to kind of seek out the position, and what drew you to it, or did they just kind of pluck you out of obscurity?
So I was the Virginia Sierra Club environmental chair. So I did all the endorsements for the Sierra Club in the state of Virginia, and I got to meet Jerry Connolly. And we did an interview of Jerry. He was an amazing environmentalist, and we just started chatting. The next thing, I got a call that said, hey, would you serve on EQAC? So I gave up my chair of the Virginia chapter of Sierra Club, and I just became an inside advisor to Supervisor Conley, and we became good friends, and it just kind of went from there.
And I, at the time, was working for a regional Audubon Natural Society. It's changed its name to Nature Forward. And I was working on water quality issues. And I had been lobbying, going to Kate Hanley and asking her to do certain things. And that's when she said, well, do you want to serve on EQAC? And I went, okay.
Audubon Society, I think of birds first and foremost. I see you shake your head. That's a pretty pedestrian look at it, I guess.
Well, it has a lot of things, and one of the commitments that this is a regional Audubon, not national. This particular Audubon had made was a commitment to local streams and Potomac and water quality in the Chesapeake Bay, and so that's what I spent about 28 years working on.
So when you got on the EQAC board, that's what you specialized in? Is that right?
Yeah, I did streams, and I wrote the water quality chapter on streams. And I can tell the story about, so this county has a really great legacy of stream stewardship at this point. But Kate Hanley, I think it was 1998, but it was right around then, that she went ahead, and I remember the board meeting where she took $500,000 from carryover money, and she asked then Tony, who was the county exec, if he could produce a document that would be a good stream survey. And so they were tasked with doing it. And it got published in late 1999, early 2000, but it's the basis for all the stream efforts that have moved forward, because every 4 years they do a survey of 25% of those streams. So we have up-to-date data over the last 20-some-odd years on where those streams are. And I will cut this off right now by saying, everybody says, well, there hasn't been much improvement, but my response is there's been a huge amount of development and there hasn't been a decline. And so you have to factor in that it's at least, if not, it has gotten better in some places, but it's holding the line in others. And that's a big deal when you look at this county's growth.
Working here at Channel 16, I've done many videos over the past years on stream restoration, which I think is fascinating, just coming from a perspective where I just like to go enjoy streams, but to see what's done to rehabilitate certain areas where there's a lot of stormwater runoff and that, it's fascinating.
So I will say this, and then I'm going to ask George to talk about development because they're tied in. But when you talk about stream restoration, you just made the greatest case for why we should do it, because it's not just about fixing the stream up. It's about making the environment better so the people who live here can enjoy it. And so people sometimes talk about, well, it's not cost effective. Well, how do you measure cost effectiveness if suddenly you can walk along a stream and let your children put their hands in it? And so it's a multidimensional what's important. But land development.
Yeah, George, tell me about your focus.
I mean, they go hand in hand. If you could look at EQAC over like every 5 years, there's something really big and momentous. And streams were one of the biggest things. The mapping of the streams, the, how that's tied to development, the RPAs and where things get built. I think Stella found 30 miles of streams. Like that was found because we mapped the streams and we actually put a protocol in place.
Perennial streams. Right, because the perennial streams are what's protected under the Chesapeake Bay regulations. And they have a certain setback where you can't build. Mm-hmm. And if you actually map the streams and look at it, as he said, the streams were there, but we found that more of them deserve to be perennial.
So that's like all those edge streams, they are now protected because of the work that was done to map the streams and actually scientifically figure out what's in them and what's living. From the land use perspective, how we develop is kind of the most biggest impact in the streams and in like our whole quality of life. So I came on in 2002, that's when sprawl was a big deal. And we're trying to figure out, like, what is sprawl, how do we develop? So the streams were in a good place, but there was just kind of rampant development. So the land use chapter was a big deal. The integration of land use and transportation, things like the development potential. If there's like 7% impervious, the streams start to die. Over 7%, there's like nothing can live in them. So there's a direct correlation between what's built around streams and what can live in the streams.
You get a little bit of stuff that lives in the stream, but compared to what to be there when it's healthy, the more impervious surface you put down, the more you lose the quality of life in the streams.
How is that? I imagine that the stream gets more water.
Kind of think about it like a big, like a toilet bowl. When you flush the toilet bowl, the more water goes through, everything gets flushed out.
It's a deluge.
And so what happens with streams is really simple. In a healthy stream, and I won't spend a lot of time on this, in a healthy stream, it's the stream bed is right next to it. And so when it floods, the water goes up, over, and into the floodplain. Mm-hmm. In an unhealthy stream, there's been so much water coming down that the stream is cut. And if you look at most of the streams around here, they're 3, 4, 5 feet down deep. And then the banks with sediment start falling in. And most of the life in a stream is on the bottom. And so when you smush it with sediment and you keep shoving water down there, the cut goes deeper, it's disconnected from its floodplain, and it just gets worse. And so with stream restorations, you raise the stream bed back up, connect it to the floodplain, and it can manage this huge amounts of water coming down, and you have a possibility of Reston's a great example of restoring some. You're never going to get back what you lost because there's too much impervious cover, but you'll get back something. Mm-hmm.
George, from the land use perspective and development, you know, Fairfax County is a ever-developing county. What are the kind of things that really concern you?
So when I started, the big thing was build out. So if you look at the land in Fairfax, it was sort of planned, and build out is when everything that's been planned is built. That actually happened right around 2002, 2004. Everything since then is redevelopment. So if you look at, you know, how do you grow from 500,000 people to 1 million people when everything's built? You just do bigger and taller. And that's kind of the interrelation. The other major thing that happened the next 5 years was the concept of holistic planning. So things like mixed-use development centers. You see Mosaic, you see Tysons. Stella and I both served on the Tysons task force. It's hard to believe, but before Tysons had nobody living in there. Well, it had 10% of the people living there, but it was mostly a transit place. People would come and not live there. There was no hotels. And this isn't that long ago. I mean, there were a couple, but it wasn't really the life and the vibrant place it is now. That was all planned. It was all holistic. We spent 3 years meeting once a week, talking about like where should things go and how should people live in Tysons. And what you have today is really a direct result of the work that task force did in 2005. Mosaic's another example. If you look at the Mosaic Center, I just look back, that was built in 2014. The people that live there love it. It's like it's integrated. There's the movie theater. People can live and work, and they can get to the metro. So that was sort of the transition. How do you add more people? How do you sort of concentrate it so that you're not getting all this impervious? There's a lot of stormwater protections that are built in when you go higher and taller.
And what was interesting about Tysons, there are four of the county's 30 streams originate in Tysons because it's on a hill. And during the development process in the 50s and the 60s, nobody was paying attention. If you walked by those streams, you'd find parking lots heading down towards the stream, and they put notches in there so the stuff running off the parking lots could go directly into the streams. And so part of the redevelopment of Tysons was putting in restoration of streams as a piece of the going up. And so there were trade-offs. But you go to some of the areas that have been built out, and you'll now see streams restored where people who live there can walk along a stream. But that wasn't true. And I'm not blaming anyone. It was 1950. Nobody thought about it. It wasn't on anyone's consciousness.
Build out was 50 years away.
Right. And so, but I mean, if you go to Gallows Road and look under Gallows Road, there's Old Courthouse Run there, and the stream actually disappears under a linear set of development along Route 7. And it was completely buried during the development process. And so... that's what they did.
Something we learned about Tysons when we were working on it is the headwaters of Scott Run is at Tysons. And it used to be like sort of coming up, but now the headwaters really comes from the air conditioner condensers.
You're kidding.
All the condensation is that's now driving where the water goes.
There are four streams that originate in Tysons.
Wow.
And you have to work hard. One of them is actually, I don't remember which one, one of them is actually in one of the roundabouts as you're coming off one of the major roads.
I can't imagine that if you bury a stream, it's good for what you're building on top of it either.
You know, I can't speak to the building on top of it. It's not good for the stream underneath it, that's for sure.
That. Engineers are pretty good at making things that last.
So, yeah, but Old Courthouse Run really disappears into about a 6-7 foot round pipe.
Yeah. Well, how does EQAC and how do EQAC and DPWES work together?
So... I think what we do in terms of so I'm going to speak to the stream stuff
because everyone has their own way of working.
I spent a lot of time working with the different people who ran it, like Randy Bartlett and Jimmy Jenkins and people like that. Basically, they needed support to move forward with the kind of things that they did, and we were pretty much always supporting them. The Department of Public Works, and from the year like the late 1990s. To the year 2020, spent a lot of time hiring biologists and things that they never had because it started out as all engineers pretty much. Mm-hmm. And they figured it out that they needed to have this balance of people who looked at systems as living systems dynamically. And so, I would say when I think about people like Craig Carinci or Shannon Curtis, that these are people who, and Craig used to run the stream restoration part. These are people who really evolved their own way of looking at things and dealing with things to a very, as you put it, much more holistic, sort of modern approach to streams.
Yeah, we do two things on EQAC. One is we know the supervisors. So I had a very close relationship to staff, and if something was interesting or important, I'd get a call or we'd talk to Noel, and he'd say, this is important. And I'd call Jerry and say, Supervisor Conley, this is important. And we would lobby on behalf of what's important, and we would kind of elevate it.
And we would send resolutions. Mm-hmm. If there was an issue coming up, like one of the last things I did as chairman was that there was some talk about making the floodplains smaller and creating a new floodplain ordinance, which in a time of increased flooding was a really bad idea. A really bad idea. Yeah. And we sent a very strong resolution to the board saying, this is not a good idea. And, I'm not saying that we're responsible for them listening to it, but we certainly gave them some background and an ability to say, no, this is not a good idea, and it didn't pass. But it's that kind of thing where we watchdog, we make recommendations, and we send resolutions, and we lobby individually. I think that's pretty much how we act as a council.
The biggest issue we did before we stepped down was data centers.
Oh, God.
EQAC had a huge say. We did the research to understand, how much water is going in there? Where's the water go? What's the salinity of the water?
And salinity is a big issue with data centers.
Well, what is, since that's a hot topic, what are the main considerations people should be thinking about?
So that's what EQAC put out in our memo. But it's the power use, clearly. the water use, the amount of almost every piece of energy that goes in has to be cooled down. So it's turned into like some kind of bits and bytes, and that takes power, and then you get the cooling that needs to happen. So it chills it out.
And the cooling isn't clean.
Who's that clean?
The cooling is not clean.
What do you mean by that?
It has stuff in it.
It's so a lot of the cooling in data centers is condensation. Mm-hmm. So that the water gets in, it gets evaporated, you get condensation. But that concentrates the water. So if some salt comes in at like 2%, it comes out at 15%. And I don't know the exact numbers, so I'm not an engineer on that side. But so there is that concentration that then goes to the streams because that's how water is.
And freshwater streams are really, really not, the organisms in freshwater streams are not designed to deal with salt water.
Yes.
That's why they're freshwater systems. And so it's really not a good thing. That's all I can say. It's a really bad thing.
What's it like navigating a system here in a county that is very ambitious and, you know, is constantly growing and looking for newer, better ways of doing things, which means a lot of, you know, building and growth, balancing that with environmental concerns? Because I know the county leadership is also very concerned about the environment. What's that like from your perspective?
So let's talk about Lake Accotink, because it's my favorite example of what happens when you don't do something. If those upstream streams had been managed for sediment control and for a whole lot of things, you would not have seen the problem in Lake Accotink. So, I mean, the real reality with the environment is you either pay for it up front or you pay for it later. And when you pay for it later, it always costs more. And so, you know, I can't say it any more clearly.
Mm-hmm. In the land use space in particular, when we started in 2002, 2010, before Tyson's became what it is, things were complicated, but not as hard as they are now. There's so many issues that have risen up. Like, we wrote the original environmental plan for the county. It was Supervisor Conley, he was running for chairman. He said,
he asked
plan.
Us to do it.
Nice. So we were the chair. We wrote it. We had 10 people on the committee, and then, you know,
it was ad hoc.
It was a degrading. It's still the document that's the basis for today.
It's been improved and added to.
But when we wrote it, climate change wasn't an issue. It wasn't there. So now climate change is probably the most important environmental issue. Air's still there. Water's still there. Development's still there. They're all there. Affordable housing, that wasn't really an issue. And social justice and the way that, you know, all the communities make use of the land, that wasn't as big an issue.
And even with streams, there's much more integration because people have stepped back and with One Fairfax and taken a hard look at which streams have been cared for and which haven't. And oddly enough, mm-hmm. in poorer communities, the streams haven't been tended to as much. And so it all hangs together as a whole.
It's such a hard problem now.
It is.
Much more complicated in issues that weren't even recognized. It's not that they weren't important. They weren't recognized. And now they're important. And, you know, we have to figure out how to live as a species with climate change and how to be a, you know, happy community with the equity versions.
Well, from your perspectives on this, how has the more recent is what I'm getting, the more recent premium put on equity, how has that affected what you were doing, especially towards the tail end of your tenure?
So I'm in Mason District, kind of near Seven Corners. Mm-hmm. We had a couple of parks there that, you know, equity has actually helped those parks because the recognition that, you know, everyone should have a clean stream, mm-hmm. especially Justice Park, that's a great example. And so Fairfax One's actually helped the environment in that space. So I'm pretty happy with where it's going. It's very hard to do the sort of the outreach across all these diverse communities, but it's super important. Yeah.
And so what I would say about if we look at streams and equity, prior to the issues of looking at equity in this county, we had done stream plans for every single stream in the county. It was, I don't remember, somewhere around 2013, 2014.
The time goes by.
Yeah. We had laid out, it was a long planning process that involved communities in coming up with plans for these streams for restoration. I think since those plans exist and they have they're obviously going to change because the impacts on stream changes. But I think with the equity thing, it just changes where you focus. If you go to some of the sort of less affluent neighborhoods, you'll find houses are crowded together, mm-hmm. and you'll have streams between houses where there's no floodplain. So what do you do? And so it's water management in areas that may be, I don't know, 25% impervious cover. Mm-hmm. No floodplains. And so how do you help them have these things and manage? And how do you build a sense of stewardship in those communities so they care? That's to me, because you brought it up when, you know, you said something about walking along streams earlier when we were talking. And what I would want for every Fairfax resident is to have a local stream they felt comfortable walking yeah. along. Mm-hmm. They could walk their dogs, their children, their wife, their, you know, their friends, and not have it look ghastly and not have it be, I don't know, contagious.
You know, for me, it's Holmes Run.
And that's stream. A stream that's taken some
yeah.
hits.
Yeah, yeah, I would imagine. But it's still very...
Holmes Run Stream Valley Trail is beautiful.
I love it.
That's inner city. I mean, there's a lot of dense development around there, and it's still a good functioning stream.
Yeah,
and so you... And when we say functioning stream, we have no illusion that these streams are ever going to go back to being what they were. What we want is the maximum we can get without having some insane goal mm-hmm. of restoring to its original thing. But Reston is the best example of looking at all the holistic streams there. And that happened. That was a trade-off because of the development in the airport. And they had to do some stream restoration there. So Fairfax got probably tens of thousands of dollars, if not more, of stream restoration that was a gift because it came out of the requirement for them to pay back the development there that took away some land.
So in land use, when you're developing, is that now written in? Is that now baked into the whole recipe?
The comprehensive plan is the Bible. That's being revised right now. The zoning ordinance is the law. So between the, and it's fairly complicated how those two actually work together. Mm-hmm. It took me a couple of years to figure it out. But zoning tells you like what you legally can build. And the comprehensive plan says what should be built where. And you have to, you know, once you figure out what should be where, then you have to build according to the zoning regulations.
And it seems to put a lot of responsibility on developers. If you want to develop here and reap the benefits of being in Fairfax County, you got to help us out in this way.
So the last thing I was most passionate about was the concept of minimum compliance, because the zoning ordinance is not strong enough to protect the environment. The law is not strong enough. It's based on Virginia law and the law that's in place. But if we build to the zoning ordinance, we're not going to protect the environment. It's going to continue to go downhill. But we get development. We used to have proffers. They're kind of don't use proffers that much anymore. But through a holistic approach where everyone sort of comes together, if you do it the right way, you can get the development and the density and you can protect the environment. So you got to be very careful about like what's the minimum standards and what's the objective that
the
we
goal.
Want.
Right. Stella, what was your proudest accomplishment, your most passionate pursuit?
I think probably it's two things. It's making Tyson's work, but yeah. mostly about the evolution of the stream plan from, you know, when Kate Hanley first asked for that overall stream review to all of the additional kinds of, you know, whether it was the physical stream assessment, that this sort of building up till we came to the stream plans for all 30 watersheds. And then, so now we have in place a way to manage our watersheds in a very overarching understanding what's going on. And even though I agree with George that they're not really as protected as we'd like to see them, we at least understand them and we understand what's happening. And with the review, we get to see if there's a downturn in a certain area, because it's a random review, 25% every year, it's important to do. Yeah. And so those for me would be the two things I cared most about EQAC.
George?
There was a couple things. I spent a couple years being big on data analytics, and the GIS system we have is amazing. So advocacy for that, the plan we wrote for the for Supervisor Connolly, his environmental vision, which became the vision, and that's still the linchpin. That was written in 2004, revised in 2017. Mm. It's kind of gotten a little bit old now, but it's still the basis of really what we're doing with climate change. So there's a really good focus on clean water, on climate change and adaption there. So there's been the whole climate approach that we've taken. I hope it keeps being as strong as it is, but that has been pretty significant to see Fairfax's leadership in addressing global climate change.
Well, that might be the answer to this next question, but how has the county changed since you've been, in your 23 years, in your 30 years with EQAC, And also, how has the county government changed?
Well, interestingly enough, I think some of the strongest advocates for the environment were people like, I can't say enough about Jerry Connolly. And Kate Hanley, in her own quiet way, was a pretty strong advocate for the environment. And I think those two probably had the most significant leadership in the environment. But they set down a standard that was followed up. So in terms of leadership, I think the board is comfortable, but I don't see, of course, you never see the kind of outrageous, passionate commitment to the environment that Jerry Connolly had. It's just not there in most people. But the other thing is, I think if I look back in the 1990s when I first started doing things in this county and now, whether or not we do certain things, at least we have an awareness of what's going on and what needs to get done. And oftentimes the conversation is about how do we pay for it instead of should we be aware of it and do it. And I think that's a significant change.
Yeah. I mean, I have to call it to Jean Packard, who was way back in terms of chair. She was my mentor. She's got me into the Sierra Club, and she was like guiding me all the way. And then Sharon Bulova.
Can I stop here? Huh? A third of the parks in the Fairfax County Park System are because Jean came up with that Stream Valley set-aside. So I'm completely in agreement with you.
I did a video on her a few years back, a tribute video. She seemed amazing. Like an amazing woman.
She was, yeah. Don't go there.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I think about her a lot.
But then I see when Sharon came in, that's when a lot of the issues got really complicated. That's when climate change came in, and all of a sudden it's global, and that's a new priority. Affordable housing came in, the One Fairfax. So these just came of age, and Sharon did an amazing job integrating that and protecting the environment. And now Jeff McKay, he's got this whole myriad of issues. So it's so much more complicated now. I have really a lot of respect for the board and just the complexity of the problem. Just over the 20 years I've been here, it's gotten very, very different.
Why do you think it's become more complex?
The issues that are important. Used to be there's a couple issues, but now there's so many super important issues.
Streams look simple compared to what he's talking about. I mean, when we started in 1990, it was a basic kind of thing. And then you start integrating all of this stuff. And every time you add a layer, it's more complex. Even trying to create green corridors in the county. I mean, there's just so many things that suddenly matter that weren't talked about 25 years ago.
And then even the development we see, the developers, there's incredible value in Fairfax. And every time we're successful, like once Tyson's is successful, it becomes even more valuable. Incredible pressures on, we call them the protected areas or the areas that are vulnerable. So stream banks, erodible soils, they used to not be developed. But now that we've been so successful, engineers are figuring out ways to build where they really shouldn't build. And developers are saying, we need to streamline, we need to go faster and faster approvals. And we're like, you shouldn't build there. You can build high here, but
floodplains are floodplains.
Just don't do that.
I hear a lot at the Board of Supervisors meetings because we cover them, so I'm at a lot of them, and in the committee meetings that urbanization is a goal. Does that mean building up? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, for us, it's up.
Okay.
Tyson's is a perfect example when George mentioned earlier that I think, what, there were like 10,000 people living there and 110,000 jobs. And the goal is to have 200,000 jobs and 100,000 people living there.
So 50-50 from 10% to 50%.
You know, huge.
And then vehicle miles traveled, getting that down. If everyone's driving 40 miles every day, if we could get that down to like 1 mile a day.
Yeah,
which is
everything gets smaller, things get a whole lot easier, and it's just so much more efficient from the environment's perspective.
Yeah. Well, what are your hopes for Fairfax County moving forward and for EQAC in the future?
I hope EQAC stays the course, that it remembers its mission is to look at the environment in this county and make recommendations based on what should be protected, not affordability, because the affordability issue is the board's problem. EQAC's issue is to point out the environmental issues that are important. And for the county, I sort of hope that they have a great legacy. Every single board since Kate, and you're right about Jean. I forget about Jean, but she did some fabulous things, but then some people after her did not. Anyway, you know, I just hope that they stay the course. They've set out with some really good legacy programs, and what they need to do is stay the course.
Yeah, like I'm so proud of what we've done in Fairfax, just seeing the leadership, seeing how we've come together as a community. I hope it stays that way. I hope people are proud of these accomplishments. We do like daring things. There's a lot to still be done, and the problems are harder, but the sort of the understanding and the knowledge we have is also greater. So I think there's a path forward to keep going.
Yeah, and I think we've done some amazing things. 10% of the county is in some kind of park conservation easement, which is huge when you think about a county this size. Mm-hmm. And that's not just the Fairfax County Park System, but it's other systems too. I mean, there's so many things that we've done in retrospect right that, you know, when mm-hmm. we found out about it, we dealt with it. And so all you can say is keep at it.
Yeah. The smartest people in the country are in Fairfax. You know? And when you do boards and you do meetings and you meet some of these people, like, you know, leaders from EPA and leaders from all over the government, they're working together. So this is like the laboratory for some of the best ideas to actually, you know, people that live and work and they're in D.C. decide, say, like, this is the right way to build.
So. And I hope that that every single person who lives in this county finds a piece of the environment they like, whether it's a park or a stream valley trail or whatever, so that they feel connected to the natural world in a place that it is a little bit harder because it is more urbanized. But I think New York sets the standard when you realize how much that means to every single person who lives in an urban area.
Yeah, and, well, having a personal connection here, living, working in Fairfax County and having a personal connection with a natural place here. How do you suggest residents get involved in environmental issues or, you know, helping with EQAC?
How do you get involved?
So I live in Great Falls, and there's a Great Falls Citizens Association. And I think oftentimes, so ultimately the supervisors vote. And so if you have a local issue, you take it to, there is a Fairfax Federation of Citizens Association, you take it to your local community, and your local community elevates it to whatever, you know, all I can say is for me, it's the GFCA, elevates it so that the supervisor sees it. And if you want to, contact the person who's your representative on EQAC and say, I have real concerns about this issue. Because we've had that happen. And EQAC has a hearing once a year where they invite people to come in and talk about what they want to, what they have concerns about.
When is that generally?
January.
January.
Yeah. I read our annual report. We don't write it anymore, but the EQAC annual report comes out every year. Just read it once, and then it doesn't change that much. But it's a great sort of
overview,
100-page overview of the environment in Fairfax. And then, like, once I step down from EQAC, I'm working with my friend on Friends of Holmes Run. So, and then I on weekends I go out and I'll take down Ivy or something. So there's like, yeah, I do simple things now, not as complex and as policy oriented, because I do that at work. And yeah, now I just go out and.
I mean,
the
there's
backyards and take out ivy.
There's stream cleanups all over the place. There's all kinds of ways to be involved. I think the Northern Virginia Soil and Conservation District coordinates the stream cleanups. I mean, there's a lot of ways for a lot of people who'd never like walked Difficult Run, which is the largest stream in the county. It starts here.
Oh,
did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Behind the government center is the origins of Difficult Run. I don't make this up.
Wow. I walk back there all the time.
Yeah. It's the longest stream in the county.
And
it has
all the way to the Potomac. It's gorgeous down there.
Yeah, and it has 10 feeder streams coming in. It is the largest watershed in the county. But, you know, there's all kinds of cleanups that go on and all kinds, you know, go birding with someone who walks stream trails.
Yeah.
There's the Jerry Connolly Trail that goes from one side of the county to the other side of the county.
Even Huntley Meadows.
Yeah, I mean, there's Huntley Meadows is an
amazing,
yeah, exactly. It's an amazing, it's the crown jewel of the Fairfax County system.
Like, don't touch it.
Leave it alone.
Stella, George, I really appreciate your time, and this has been very interesting for me, and I know that listeners will find it interesting too. But also, thank you for the work you've done. I'm a 15-year resident here, so you did a lot of work that made my moving to Fairfax County, you know, a pleasure. So thank you both so much.
Well, you're welcome, and it was a pleasure to do the work.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to EnviroPod. If you want to get more information on the Fairfax County Department of Public Works and Environmental Services and all that it does, go to fairfaxcounty.gov/publicworks or call 703-324-5033, weekdays between 8 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. Thanks again for joining us on EnviroPod, which is produced by the Fairfax County, Virginia government.